Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading articles from the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, April 24th, 2021. Front page, education. MISD says assessment not about bond, but maintenance plan, by Stuart Doreen. A facilities assessment presented to the Midland ISD board was about creating a maintenance plan, not a bond. That is what Midland ISD board president Brian Murray told the Reporter Telegram this week. Murray said that when he was on the facilities committee, he was surprised that the district didn't have a maintenance plan. He also said that one criticism during the 2019 bond campaign was that the district was not keeping up with maintenance. This study is expected to help Chief Operations Officer Kelly Spencer and the district's facility committee to develop such a plan. Board members currently on the committee are Tommy Bishop, the committee chairman, Rick Davis, and Michael Booker. The study provided a look at aged infrastructure. 25 school buildings are at least 50 years old, and $266.05 million cost summary of the improvements needed. A cost summary for the deficiencies included $116.72 million for the interior of buildings, $55.46 million for mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, $50.88 million for civil, $16.62 million for exterior maintenance, $14.92 million for accessibility issues, and $11.44 million for roof issues. There are some big numbers in the report, Murray said. The next step is to develop a plan to address issues and address issues before they become a problem. Murray said that the maintenance issues at Midland ISD's elementary schools were higher than he expected, and he was hoping to get a clearer report there. It also showed, he said, areas that aren't crying for urgency, but that need to be updated. On Monday, Huckabee officials told the Midland ISD board that the facilities are in pretty good shape considering their age. When asked about the intent of the study, Murray said, "I don't want to talk about bonds. Maybe down the road if that is what we need to do, but that wasn't the intent of the board." Telling a tale of two cities. Midland and Odessa mayors discuss development and sanctuary cities, by Caitlin Randall. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton and Odessa Mayor Javier Jovan addressed their future plans for the two cities and discussed issues like taxes and sanctuary cities during a forum Thursday night. The forum, hosted by the Midland Liberty Leadership Council, was held at Rolling Sevens Ranch Event Center and moderated by Reporter Telegram editor Stuart Doreen. Economic development and taxes. Despite an announcement Thursday morning that the Odessa Development Corporation had secured a $7 billion deal with Nacero Incorporated for a new oil and gas facility, Jovan cast doubt on the need for the ODC. One of his frustrations was the entity that the city council doesn't have access to the funds that go to the ODC, he said. Jovan recently spoke out against a $600,000 grant from the ODC for renovations at the Ellen Noel Art Museum. On Thursday, he said the ODC has stretched beyond its original purpose to diversify Odessa's economy. The Odessa mayor also said the city is likely going to look at raising the tax rate because of revenue loss related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Any increase would need to be approved by voters. Jovan said the city is going to focus more on basic priorities, like water and roads, and less on items related to quality of life. Payton said the fallacy with the Midland Development Corporation is that its function is to diversify the city's economy rather than embrace the oil industry. He said Midland needs to prioritize the scientific development that's going to occur within the industry. The Midland City Council will also look to raise the tax rate, Payton said. But they'll use some revenue to increase quality of life by adding more outdoor recreation options. I hope that a legacy that we can leave behind is we have begun to make this into one of the most outdoor-friendly places for recreational facilities and areas in the entire West Texas, he said. Sanctuary cities for the unborn and Second Amendment rights. Passing an ordinance to outlaw abortion in Odessa was one of the major platforms of Jovan's campaign. On Thursday, he said passing that ordinance is the main accomplishment he hopes to have during his time as mayor. Jovan has already drafted an ordinance similar to ones that have been passed by other Texas cities, but he doesn't have enough votes on the council, he said. Other council members have expressed concerns that the ordinance would open the city up to lawsuits, while Roe v. Wade remains in place. I'm willing to take that risk of being sued, Jovan said. Peyton said he's not a fan of virtue signaling or the reactionary right, but said he has asked the city's legal department to explore everything that's a benefit to Midland. I've already talked to the city attorney and said, show me the things that can happen here. Show me the things that we can do, he said. But I'm also not going to put the city in a situation where someone can come in and sue the pants off the city. Ag County Option Tax on District Ector. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton issued an opinion on April 5th stating that the city of Odessa should not be entitled to tax revenue generated in areas annexed by the city, and that revenue should instead go to the county. That opinion was based on the county's wording when a tax assistance district was placed on the ballot and approved by voters in 2018. Jovan criticized previous city council members and Ector County officials for not communicating better during the process of creating the district. This is what happens when we as elected officials or leaders fail the community, Jovan said. This is what we inherited. It's a tough situation. The AG opinion will soon become relevant to the city of Midland, as Midland County looks to have a tax assistance district approved by voters this November. In an interview following Thursday night's forum, Peyton said that the city and county will need to work together on the tax district. The city is very interested in, when the future comes around with annexation, how we're going to pay for it, he said. That's going to be a discussion about how those taxes work, so it might be easy today to say we might not be interested in those taxes, but when the city begins to grow, everybody's going to be interested in those taxes. Energy. TXOGA releases Study of Winter Storms Impact by Mella McEwen. A cascade of failures as Winter Storm Uri began to settle in over Texas in February resulted in almost 5 million Texans being left in the dark as the state's electric grid struggled with the record-setting cold. Everyone needs a full assessment of the situation, said Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, in unveiling a report on the performance of natural gas during the storm. The report was conducted by data analytics firm Enverus. Bernadette Johnson, Senior Vice President, Power and Renewables at Enverus, said that based on our assessment of the data, it is likely issues started at power generation units. Responses from upstream participants in the survey, which represented 51% of natural gas production in the state, identified three impacts on their operations: loss of power to the site, 65%, wellhead and equipment freeze-offs, 13%, and not being able to move production due to issues with third-party facilities, pipelines, gathering or transmission lines, processing facilities or plants, 8.7%. Approximately 91% of respondents said their operations are powered through a connection to the electric grid. Midstream participants in the survey offered four impacted on their operations: loss of power, 80%, lack of production from upstream, 80%, road, crew, truck, and other logistical issues, 40%, and equipment freeze-offs, 20%. Every fuel type declined during the storm, with natural gas-fired plants losing 20,000 megawatts, coal-fired plants 6,000 megawatts, wind 4,000 megawatts, and nuclear fell by 1,000 megawatts. Despite the challenges, data shows natural gas increased to provide 60% of the fuel powering electric generation during the storm. The timing of the failures was geographically widespread but happened in rapid succession, Johnson said. We looked into the gas supply issues that caused generators to fail. The geographic spread and rapid succession pointed to issues at the power generators not related to natural gas supplies. That ties into the largest failure during the storm, which was communications, said Staples. He noted that the application for critical load, which lists facilities that electric generators like Oncor must continue to power, does not apply to field services, the wells and processing facilities that move the natural gas. That's why mapping the supply chain is critical, so we can identify facilities, starting with what's directly connected to the power generation units. The power generators are the only ones with the responsibility to put power into the grid, but others have a responsibility as well, Staples said. In addition to mapping the supply chain and ensuring field facilities are part of the critical load designation, Staples said winterization standards adequate to protect those facilities should also be enacted. He said data indicates that after examination of the 2011 winter storm that urged winterization of facilities, natural gas operators winterized their facilities to various degrees. It's our belief that without electricity to the well site and the distribution chain, no amount of weatherization matters, he said. The report will be key to helping the public and decision makers understand what happened and take proper steps to address the issues found, Staples said. I think reports like this help inform both the industry and policymakers, and reports like the one ERCOT has done will continue to inform policymakers in order to come out with the best policies, he said. He listed a number of bills making their way through the Texas legislature and said he believes the legislative body is moving in the right direction. More work needs to be done, but the legislature is headed in the right direction to ensure this never happens again, Staples said. Midland, Martin, and Howard counties combined for 65 rigs, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity took a slight breather this week, according to the weekly rig count. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics from Enverus reported the U.S. rig count dropped one to 438, 27 below the 465 at work a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for oil also fell one to 343, 35 below the 378 seeking oil last April. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was unchanged at 94 and is nine above the 85 reported last year. Texas saw its drilling activity fall by three rigs and is 20 below the 231 at work last April. New Mexico gained a rig for 71. The two states were the only producing states in the U.S. to show rig movement this week. The Permian Basin dropped one rig to 226 for the week and is just 20 below the 246 at work in the region last year as rig activity was on its way to historic lows amid the pandemic and oil market crash. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian with 42 rigs, unchanged for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico follows with 29 rigs, up one. Midland County reported 25 rigs unchanged for the week. Reeves County saw 21 rigs at work within county lines, up one rig. Howard and Martin counties each had 20 rigs unchanged for the week. There were 15 rigs at work in Loving County, unchanged for the week, and 12 rigs in Upton County, also unchanged for the week. Enverus Rig Analytics reported 517 rigs, up three, in its report issued Thursday. This differs from the Baker Hughes rig count because Enverus counts all rigs as long as the target is hydrocarbons, while Baker Hughes may not count sputter rigs or activity on shallow wells. Enverus said this is the first week this year to show an increase on a year-over-year basis. The count is up 7% in the last month and 11% year-over-year. At this point a year ago, crude spot prices went from averaging a closing price of $50.54 a barrel in February to an average of $16.55 a barrel in April, according to the Energy Information Administration. On April 21, 2020, a day after spot oil prices had fallen to a negative $38 a barrel, the rig count had plummeted 39% month over month and 55% year over year. West Texas claims top five spot for highest gas prices, by Stuart Doreen. There is no region in the state that can compare with West Texas when it comes to the highest gasoline prices. AAA Texas reported Thursday that the five highest gas prices in the 27 metropolitan areas could be found in West Texas. El Paso led the way. Drivers there are paying an average of $2.90 for regular unleaded gasoline. Midland and Odessa held on to their respected positions with averages of $2.87 and $2.82, respectively. The fourth and fifth highest averages were found in San Angelo, $2.70, and Abilene, $2.69. AAA Texas also reported a state average of $2.59. Of all the cities in West Texas and the Panhandle, the only one with an average lower than the state average was Amarillo, $2.51. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Week over week, the price of gas rose 2 cents across the state. AAA Texas reported the following changes across the region. An increase of 5 cents in Amarillo and Abilene. An increase of 1 cent in San Angelo and no change in Lubbock, where the average was $2.62. A decrease of 1 cent in Midland and El Paso. And a decrease of 2 cents in Odessa. AAA Texas also reported that for the first time in a month, drivers in Texas are paying more at the pump week to week. According to the latest data from the Energy Information Administration, U.S. gasoline demand numbers rose to just greater than 9.1 million barrels per day, which is the highest level since August 2020, AAA Texas wrote in a news release. Market factors are pointing toward higher prices as we head towards summer, stated AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in the release. The lowest average of the 27 larger metropolitan areas in Texas was $2.43 in San Antonio. The only other metropolitan area with an average price below $2.50 was Corpus Christi at $2.49. Year over year, gas prices are up by $1.08 in Midland. In Odessa, the difference is $1.17. The state average is $1.05. Since January 1st, the average price in Midland is up 80 cents. The state average has increased 65 cents. Airport has strongest month since start of pandemic, by Stuart Doreen. It appears higher oil prices and COVID's lessening impact has Midlanders returning to the Midland International Airport. The city reported passenger numbers in March not only top March 2020, but are closer to the status quo experienced prior to the economic downturn and COVID-19 pandemic. The number of passengers flying Southwest, American Eagle, or United reached 38,104, which was higher than the 30,516 in March 2020, when the first cases in the Permian Basin were reported. Statistics from the City of Midland showed that coming into March, that the percentage of people aboarding an aircraft was down between 48% and 50% this calendar year, and down 49.5% during the fiscal year. The number of passengers in March, however, was 28.8% less than March 2019, 53,544, and 24.4% less than March 2018, 50,438. Those percentages are the closest to the pre-downturn levels, and around half of the percentage drops experienced this fiscal year. Airport statistics also showed gains in fuel sales and parking revenue. The city showed $359,391 in parking revenue. That was not only a 30.1% increase year over year, but within 6.3% of the March collection in 2019. Southwest Airlines led the pack with a 41.5% share of the passengers leaving Midland International. Southwest did report a 29% improvement year over year. American Eagle showed the greatest improvement, 39.5%. Midland region accounts for 77.53% of oil completions in Texas during March, from staff reports. The number of new oil completions in the Midland region of the state made up 77.53% of those across the state during the month of March. The RRC reported 428 oil completions in March. That number was 111 more than February and 394 more than the next closest region, Refugio. The number of permits to drill new oil and gas holes in the Midland region rose from 324 in February to 379 in March. The March figure was 55.57% of the 682 across the state, according to the Railroad Commission. The closest region was San Angelo, with 80. The RRC also reported 65 gas completions in the Midland region in March, which was 11 more than February, and 48.5% of the gas completions across the state. The San Antonio area was the next closest region with 42. The Railroad Commission reported a total of 798 original drilling permits, which also includes permits to re-enter plugged well bores and permits for recompletions of existing well bores in March, compared to 744 in March 2020. In March, Commission staff processed 601 oil, 162 gas, and 110 injection completions for new drills, re-entries, and recompletions. Midland Reporter-Telegram obituaries published Saturday, April 24th. Barbara Jean Majors. Barbara Jean Majors, 65, of Midland, passed away on April 21st, 2021, at her home in Midland, Texas. Barbara was born on December 12, 1955, to Dale and Lorraine Henderson in Santa Barbara, California. She married Michael Majors on January 2, 2003, in Midland. She is survived by her spouse, Michael Majors of Midland, three children, Melissa Burks and husband Andrew, Jonna Glass and husband Justin Cody, and Michael Majors Jr., seven grandchildren and six sisters, Darla, Merkett, Diana, Volk, and husband Bill, Arlene Wallace, Berta Parks, and husband Richard, Audrey Denman, and husband Rick, and Karina Fulton, and several nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents, Dale and Lorraine Henderson. Services are pending at this time. Billy Bob Robertson. Billy Bob Robertson left this life on April 21st, 2021, to step into his everlasting life in the arms of Jesus. He was born May 1st, 1974, in Victoria, Texas, to Bonnie and Willis LeJean, Jean, Robertson. Billy is preceded in death by wife Anna Laura Dostal, grandparents Billy W. and Letta Robertson, brother Lynn Robertson, and aunt Brenda Woodruff. He is survived by parents Willis LeJean and Bonnie Robertson of Midland, sister Keely Robertson of Midland, brother Randy Robertson and wife Sherry of Elkhart, Kansas, grandparents J.B. and Lorene Woodruff of Midland, uncle Tom Woodruff and wife Nancy of Granbury, uncle Joel Woodruff of Teague, Texas, aunt Patsy and husband Bobby Connor of Lubbock, aunt Terry and husband Larry Rhodes of Lubbock, niece Shay Robertson of Elkhart, Kansas, nephew Rhett Robertson of Germany, nephew Krager Crouch of Midland, and numerous other family and friends. The visitation will be held on Monday, April 26th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. The memorial service will be held on Tuesday, April 27th at 10 a.m. at Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 South State Highway 349 in Midland, officiated by Brother Rick Holman. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. David Roger Lloyd. David Roger Lloyd, 84, went to be with the Lord on April 19, 2021, after a 14-year-long battle with Parkinson's disease. He was born October 12, 1936, in Pecos, Texas, to Alvin and Goldie Lloyd. He's preceded in death by his wife and love of his life, Lila Lloyd, along with his brothers Keith Lloyd, Joel Lloyd, Conrad Lloyd. Dave and his wife lived in Midland for 50 years. He is survived by his children, Floyd Lloyd, Darletta J. Cox, Daryl Lloyd, and Paul Lloyd of Austin, Texas, Mike Lloyd and his wife Erin Lloyd of Midland, and grandchildren Katie and Lucas Krube of Atlanta, Georgia, Amber and Megan J. Cox of Austin, Texas, Alex J. Cox of Abilene, Caleb of Midland, as well as nephew, honorary son, Edmund Lloyd and wife, Beverly of San Marcos, and many nieces and nephews. He is survived by his brother, Don Lloyd, and wife, Sarah of Orlando, Florida, as well as his sister Gloria Youngblood and her husband Wilton of Midland. He will be buried at Fort Houston National Cemetery in San Antonio at a small graveside service with family. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to St. Jude's Children's Hospital in his honor. Judy Coleman Warren. Judy Coleman passed away from the side effects of Parkinson's disease on Wednesday, March 18th. She was 77 years old. A memorial service will be held graveside at Rest Haven Memorial Park Tuesday afternoon at 1, April 20th, 2021. Judy was preceded in death by her parents, Fred and Nell Ehrig. She is survived by her husband, Bill Warren of Midland, and his children, Shannon Cochran of Kingswood and Kelly Blankenship of Plano. Memorials may be made to the Judy Coleman Scholarship Fund, Midland Festival Ballet, P.O. Box 52034, Midland, Texas 79710. Patricia K. Winkler. With a peaceful heart, Patricia K. Winkler, 64, of Midland, passed away on Easter Sunday, April 4th, with her family by her side. Patricia was born in Lafayette, Louisiana, to Raymond and Nell Winkler. Patricia was preceded in death by both of her parents, Raymond and Nell. She is survived by her brother Errol and his wife Mary. She will be missed by her fiancé, Alan Macrina, along with many cousins in Texas and Louisiana. A celebration of life will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church, 1906 West Texas Avenue, Wednesday, April 28th at 1 p.m. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to a charity of your choice. Robert Payton. Memorial service of Robert Payton, longtime Midland resident and owner of Payton's Toys and Bikes. Saturday, May 1st, 2021, 10 a.m. St. Luke's United Methodist Church, 3011 West Kansas Avenue, Midland. Graveside following at 11 a.m. Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street. Susan Marinas Evans. Susan Marinas Evans passed away peacefully on April 19, 2021, in Midland, surrounded by loving family. She was born October 22, 1946, in Dallas, to her parents, Dr. Thomas and Betty Sue Marinas. Susie was preceded in death by her parents, Betty Sue and Dr. Thomas Marinas, and her husband's parents, Betty and Sam Evans. She is survived by her husband, Donald L. Evans, her daughter, Lisa Moon, and husband, Shan, and their children, Mackenzie, Emily, and Mitchell, of Midland, Texas, her daughter Jenny Evans of Brookshire, Texas, and her son Donald L. Evans Jr. and wife Warren and their two sons, Donald L. Evans III and wife Tripp and Jameson of Marble Falls, Texas. She is also survived by two brothers, Thomas P. Marinas Jr. and wife Lucinda of Houston, and Stephen J. Marinas and wife Noemi of Porter, Texas, and brother-in-law Richard Evans of Houston, sister-in-law Peggy Evans Leish, and husband Dr. Jack Leish of Dallas. She is also survived by many nieces and nephews. Memorials may be given in her memory to Bynum School, 5100 Avalon Drive, Midland, Texas, 79707. The George W. Bush Foundation, 2943 SMU Boulevard, Dallas, Texas, 75205. The Brookwood Community, 1752 FM 1489, Brookshire, Texas, 77423. The University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, P.O. Box 4486, Houston, Texas, 77210, or a charity of your choice. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, April 26th at First United Methodist Church in Midland. Celebration of Life will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, April 27th at First United Methodist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Midland Reporter Telegram Death Notices, Saturday, April 24th. Bertha Galindo. Bertha Galindo, 63, of Midland, passed away April 22nd. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Friday, April 23rd at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 24th at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Survivors include husband Cecilio Galindo and children Ava Ortega and Adam Galindo. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Freda Sue Kinsey. Freda Sue Kinsey, 76, passed on April 16th in Midland. A celebration of life will be held Saturday, April 24th at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland, Texas. Glenn Howell. Glenn Howell, 70, of Midland, passed away suddenly on Thursday, April 15th. There will be no services at this time, but a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Waldo David Dominguez. Waldo David Dominguez, 33, of Midland, passed away Monday, April 19th. Viewings will be held Saturday, April 24th from 1 to 9 p.m., Sunday, April 25th from 1 to 9 p.m., and Monday, April 26th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with rosaries at 7 p.m. on Sunday and Monday evenings at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Tuesday, April 27th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his parents, Maria Azart and Manuel R. Dominguez, two sons, Alexander Dominguez and Jaden Dominguez, one brother, Walter Dominguez, one sister, Renalia Dominguez, and numerous nephews and cousins.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, April 27th. Council to vote to authorize $55 million in debt for water and parks. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will decide on whether to authorize another $55 million in certificates of obligation at its meeting at 10 a.m. Tuesday. The council is considering $30 million in certificates, also known as COs, for the construction of the sewer facilities for the Northeast Utilities expansion and $25 million for recreation facilities. That spending, according to the city, includes $10 million for implementation of the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, $13 million for the turf and irrigation pilot project at four parks, and $2 million of the conversion of two turf fields to artificial turf. Certificates of obligation essentially allow cities, counties, and some special districts to issue debt without voter approval. In January 2019, city leaders stated their intention to issue $75 million in certificates of obligation over the next 3 years for projects that include a new water tower in Northeast Midland. This is the last authorization of COs related to that expansion. Tina Waz, Community Services Director for the city, said the city will look at the Parks Master Plan to determine how to spend the $10 million. She said the council considers parks upgrades as a priority, and a goal will be to bring sports fields where they need to be, and that includes parking, playgrounds, and deferred maintenance. The $13 million for the turf and irrigation project will take place at Washington, Butler, Beale, and Windlands Parks, some of the busier parks across the city's parks system, according to Waz. Lastly, $2 million will be spent to install artificial turf fields in East Midland at Reyes Mashburn Nelms Park. In November of 2020, City Council approved a reimbursement resolution in the amount of $60 million for the purpose of reimbursing the city for any expenditures undertaken for the design and engineering associated with the sewer facilities for the Northeast Utility expansion and certain parks and recreation improvements. Total issuance size for the certificates of obligation bonds is an amount not to exceed $55 million, according to the city, with an expected debt service from net revenues of the water and sewer utility system of approximately $1.93 million per year for 20 years, and an expected debt service from the ad valorem taxes of approximately $1.61 million per year for 20 years. The Texas Bond Review Board reports that the City of Midland's total debt payments as of August 31st was $325.516 million, $217.815 million in principal, and $107.701 million in interest. The total debt is the most of any of the five taxing entities: city, county, school district, hospital, and college. Council to vote on Patrick as next city manager by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland is on the verge of having its next permanent city manager. During Tuesday's Midland City Council meeting, it is likely that Robert Patrick will be voted on to succeed Courtney Sharp as the next executive leader inside City Hall. Scott Dufford, the Dean of Midland City Council members, told the Reporter-Telegram on Monday that Patrick has the votes on the council and therefore the support to become the next city manager. He has proved himself as being more than capable, and he has a good bench backing him, Dufford said of Patrick. The vote Tuesday appoints Patrick as city manager and authorizes the mayor to execute an employment agreement. Sharp resigned from the position in September because of health reasons. He passed away in December. Sharp had served in the position for around 12 years. In September, Patrick was appointed to serve as the interim city manager until a decision was made about filling the vacancy. At the time, it was reported that Patrick had served as assistant city manager for 4 years and worked for the city for 10 years, previously as a general services director and as an assistant to the city manager. Patrick's annual salary as interim city manager has been $221,120. Commissioners can't reach compromise when it comes to the horseshoe. Commentary by Caitlin Randall. The Midland County Commissioners Court on Monday continued to debate whether nonprofits should be allowed to bring water to events at the horseshoe complex, and by the end of a 30-minute discussion, they didn't seem to be any closer to agreeing on a solution. The issue was first brought up by County Judge Terry Johnson during a special meeting on April 16th. He said he wanted all nonprofits that have child participants to be able to bring their own packs of water when they hold events at the facility. Several examples were discussed, including a backpack drive with about 4,000 attendees and the Lehigh Mom Prom, when a group of moms rented the horseshoe for an alternative to Midland ISD's prom. Horseshoe hospitality manager Joe Kelly later acknowledged that the nonprofit who held the backpack drive should have been allowed to pass out water to attendees. For the Lehigh Dance, Kelly said those who rented the facility were given the option to pay a fee of $1 a bottle if they brought their own water, and he stood by that decision, saying the moms charged an admission fee and made revenue from the event. Commissioners discussed these instances on Monday with Kelly, who couldn't attend the meeting on April 16th, but they couldn't agree on what, if anything, the court should do. Commissioner Luis Sanchez ultimately asked County Attorney Russell Malm to explore amending the county's contract with Horseshoe Hospitality to state that youth events are either allowed to bring their own water or given the option to pay the $1 per bottle fee. Sanchez said it was a start, and the court moved on without taking action on the water item. The discussion was similar to others the commissioner's court has had about the horseshoe, with Johnson and Commissioner Scott Ramsey butting heads and the other commissioners falling somewhere in between on the spectrum. Johnson has been adamant that he wants to see changes to the horseshoe's policies and the county's contract, and Ramsey has been adamant, as he was on Monday, that no changes are necessary. Sanchez and Commissioners Robin Donnelly and Randy Prude end up having to pick sides, and the court is split. I don't know if anyone is right here. As Stuart Doreen pointed out in a previous Reporter Telegram commentary, should 4,000 people attending a backpack drive because they can't afford school supplies be forced to buy water for $3 a bottle at the concession stand? No, I don't think they should. But should a nonprofit renting the Horseshoe for a large, expensive banquet be allowed to bring their own water rather than paying concession or catering fees charged to groups without a 501c3 designation? Not in my opinion. I think the solution falls somewhere in the middle. The problem is that no one is looking for a middle ground. Prude suggested on April 16th that the Commissioner's Court hold a work session with Kelly, Malm, and County Auditor Veronica Morales to discuss any contentions with the Horseshoe contract. I'd like to see that come to fruition and see the county finally put conflicts over the Horseshoe to rest. As Ramsey said Monday, one special court session, two newspaper articles, one op-ed by Stuart Doreen, several television reports, all for something that could have been handled with a single phone call without all the drama. I don't know if I believe all the fighting about the Horseshoe could be handled in a single phone call, but I do believe it could be handled with communication and compromise. I wrote a commentary piece in May of 2020, almost 1 year ago, about the conflicts within the Commissioner's Court, culminating in arguing in open court. At the time, it was the height of the coronavirus pandemic, and I thought there were more important things to write about. The months and possibly years ahead will bring the most devastating economic downturn of most Midlanders' lifetimes, and they desperately need to be assured there's effective leadership in place. I wrote, I hope the commissioners will recognize that and be more united in confronting the challenges that lie ahead. A year later, the county's sales tax revenue has plummeted. Midland was just listed as fifth in the nation for migration out of the city, and thousands of Midlanders are still unemployed or earning less than they were before the pandemic. So, I guess, I'll keep hoping our leaders will find a way to get along. COVID Things to Know, Weekly Cases Rise 63%, by Stuart Doreen. The number of confirmed COVID cases inside Midland County returned to triple figures last week. The Midland Health Department reported Monday that there were 106 cases during the week, a 63% increase from the previous week when 65 were reported. The number of positive COVID-19 tests at Midland Health testing centers rose to 56 last week. That tied for the most in 1 week going back to the beginning of March. The 9.8 positivity rate was the highest since the end of February. While the number of positive tests and confirmed COVID cases rose, the number of active COVID patients hospitalized inside Midland Memorial fell to below 10. Midland Health reminds residents that the Midland County Horseshoe Backstage Mass Vaccination Site, 2514 Arena Trail, will close indefinitely at 4 p.m. Friday. Throughout the week, the site will be open from 12 noon to 4 p.m. COVID-19 vaccines will be administered to walk-ins or anyone with a scheduled appointment that is 16 years of age or older. To schedule an appointment, please call 432-221-4VAX-4829 or visit midlandhealth.org/vaccine. After April 30th, COVID-19 vaccinations will be available throughout our community at local grocery stores, pharmacies, and physician offices. To find a vaccine location, please visit the Texas Department of State Health Services Vaccine Availability Map. Midland Health reported another 2,300-plus vaccines administered last week. The 2,337 vaccines brought the total administered or transferred to 94,186 through the end of last week. That total includes more than 64,000 injections, more than 68% of the total at the Horseshoe. Week-over-week changes, COVID cases in Midland County. Last week, 106. April 11th through the 17th, 65. Positivity rate at Midland Health Testing Centers, Last week, 9.8%. April 11th through the 17th, 5.4%. Midland Memorial Hospital active COVID patients, Monday, 9. April 19th, 13. Convalescing patients, Monday, 7. April 19th, 6. Patients on ventilators, Monday, 2. April 19th, 4. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday. Aletha Ann Brown, 74, of Midland, passed away on April 22nd at her home in Midland. She was born on October 26, 1946, to William and Edith Marie Nash Sands in Pilot Point, Texas. She is survived by her three daughters, Tammy Lynn Villanueva and husband Stephen, Amy Yvette Cross Shute, and Shelley Renee Cross, 13 grandchildren, and 26 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by one son, William Martin Cross, her parents, and her biological mother, Ruby Bishop. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, April 27th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be on Wednesday, April 28th at 10 a.m. in the Bellevue Baptist Church with Raymond Revilla officiating. Burial will take place at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home. Charlotte Marie Hipp, 79, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, April 25th, surrounded by her loving family. The family will receive friends on Tuesday, April 27th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. on Wednesday at Blackwell Cemetery in Blackwell, Texas. Charlotte was born on May 11, 1941, to Geraldine and Curtis Wilson in Sweetwater, Texas. She is survived by her four children, Barry Hipp and wife Renee, Jetty Holland and husband Gordon, Tammy Pardue and husband Mike, Debbie King and husband David, and her added daughter, Ann King, 11 grandchildren, and 23 great-grandchildren. Charlotte is also survived by her brothers, Bill Wilson and wife LaRue, Larry Wilson and wife Tina, Peyton Wilson and wife Debbie, sister-in-law Emma Lou Wagoner and husband Harley, and sister-in-law Barbara Hipp. She is preceded in death by her husband, Jimmy Hipp, her parents, and her brother-in-law, Tommy Hipp. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. It is with great sadness that the family of Madeline Marie Newton announces her passing after a brief illness on Tuesday, April 20th, at the age of 80 years. Madeline will be lovingly remembered by her husband, Ray Newton, her children, Ted Hedrick and wife Leah, and Clyde Hedrick. Madeline will also be fondly remembered by her six grandchildren. Madeline was predeceased by her daughter, Donna Gant, and her sister, Ann Hunt. A memorial service will be held on Wednesday, April 28th at 3 p.m. at Northside Baptist Church in Odessa, with Reverend Clydell Chapman officiating. In lieu of flowers, those who so desire may make memorial donations in memory of Madeline to Northside Baptist Church.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. New text slated for OPD facility by Federico Martinez, FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council is expected to approve the purchase of more than $600,000 in new technology and furnishings for the police department's new training facility today during their 6 p.m. council meeting. The purchase includes cutting-edge virtual training technology that will, quote, enhance crisis intervention and de-escalation training for officers, end quote, Police Chief Mike Gerke told council during their work session this past Tuesday. The cost of the new system will be $326,471.42 and paid out of the police department's capital outlay buildings fund, Gerke said. The total cost includes shipping, installation of the tactical simulators, and a 5-year service support agreement. An additional $142,354.30 is expected to be used to purchase more than a dozen laptops, docking stations, and 29 large interactive TV monitors and various accessories. City Council is also expected to approve the police department's request to spend $141,221.31 on new furniture for the facility, including various tables, desks, and chairs. Council has also previously indicated it will approve a $30,000 art sculpture design that, when completed, will be placed outdoors in the facility's front entrance. The 10-foot-tall sculpture, which will weigh 4,000 pounds, portrays an abstract scene of a parent and child standing in front of a law enforcement officer, said Randy Hamm, executive director of Odessa Arts. The project will be paid with capital outlay funds. "We're excited," Hamm said. "It's an art piece we've previously never seen in Odessa." San Antonio artist Oscar Alvarado was one of more than 40 artists who bid on the project, Hamm said. OC Board to consider Nacero resolution. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will meet at 6 p.m. today in the Zant Community Room of the Salisbury Campus Center to consider approving a tax abatement for Nacero. The meeting will be held in person, but guests from campus will be encouraged to join via Zoom. The meeting ID number is 919-1863-8153. The passcode is 683526. And you can dial in at 1-346-248-7799, the agenda said. The Odessa Development Corporation negotiated the agreement with Nacero Incorporated, which plans to build the plant in Pinwell. Construction of a proposed $6.5 to $7 billion natural gas processing and production facility could begin by the end of the year, a project that will create at least 3,500 construction jobs and then 350 permanent jobs in Ector County, a Houston-based gas manufacturing company announced April 21st. Some of the other items on the agenda are an update on OC Techs and Odessa Collegiate Academy, both early college high schools on the Odessa College campus. At OC Techs, students can earn an associate degree as well as a high school diploma, and at OCA, they can earn college credits on their way to a high school diploma. They both offer a chance to earn associate degrees. Naming agreement for the Wood Health Sciences Building. Institutional effectiveness report. Reappointment of the college attorney. The president's report from President Gregory Williams that will include the Odessa College Leadership Institute High Impact Strategies Workshop. Spring 2021 enrollment, Vice President of Academic Partnerships, Drive to Success finale event, Aspen Prize virtual ceremony, Wrangler Athletics update, Spring Graduation 2021, and Twitter Storm. Previous coverage, tinyurl.com/mhbcare. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. Obituaries and death notices. Obituaries. Anna Teresa Ballard Lachlin. Lachlin is spelled L-A-U-G-H-L-I-N. Arlington. Anna Teresa Lachlin, 61, passed away on Thursday, April 22, 2021, in Fort Worth. Memorial service, 11 a.m. Thursday, April 29th, at First Baptist Church, 301 South Center Street, Arlington. Memorials. Memorials may be made to the P.E. department at Remence Elementary School in her honor. Teresa was born on October 10, 1959, in Fort Worth, Texas, to Thomas Timothy Ballard and Anna Marie Bailey Ballard. Teresa was preceded in death by her father and brother Michael Ballard. Survivors, husband of 40 years, Rennie Lachlan, daughter Renee Tolson and husband Brad, son Garin Lachlan and wife Tori, mother Anna Marie Ziegler, grandchildren Taylan Levi and Logan. Madeline Marie Newton, Odessa. It is with great sadness that the family of Madeline Marie Newton announces her passing after a brief illness on Tuesday, April 20th, 2021, at the age of 80 years. Madeline will be lovingly remembered by her husband, Ray Newton, her children, Ted Hedrick, Leah, and Clyde Hedrick. Madeline will also be fondly remembered by her six grandchildren, Lexi, Layton, Leanna, Alicia, Alex, and Connor. Madeline was predeceased by her daughter, Donna Gant, and her sister, Ann Hunt. A memorial service will be held on Wednesday, April 28, 2021, at 3 p.m. at Northside Baptist Church, 100 West 50th Street, Odessa, Texas, with Reverend Claudel Chapman officiating. In lieu of flowers, those who so desire may make memorial donations in memory of Madeline to Northside Baptist Church. Death notices. Aletha Ann Brown, Midland. Aletha Ann Brown, 74, of Midland, died Thursday, April 22, 2021, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m., April 28, 2021, at Bellevue Baptist Church, 1710 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79701. Burial immediately following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Pastor Raymond Revilla is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Pearl McCormick Granado, Odessa. Pearl McCormick Granado, 83, of Odessa, died Monday, April 19, 2021, in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m., April 28, 2021, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, Ector County Cemetery. Father Bush is officiating. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa, Texas. Gary Bradley Hicks, Odessa. Gary Bradley Hicks, 57, of Odessa, died Saturday, April 17, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m., Tuesday, April 27, 2021, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial is scheduled for 2 p.m., Wednesday, April 28, 2021, at Pioneer Cemetery, Highway 36, Eastland County. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Gloria L. Lujan, Odessa. Gloria L. Lujan, 64, of Odessa, died Saturday, April 24, 2021, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jesse R. Mireles, that's spelled M-I-R-E-L-E-S, Odessa. Jesse R. Mireles, 74, of Odessa, died Tuesday, April 20th, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Wednesday, April 28th, 2021, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial follows at Odessa 2 section of Ector County Cemetery. Father Fernando Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.